Chapter 19. The Very Irev, Joffy Next. Dearest Mum, life here in the...
Deleted by censors.
Camp is great fun. The weather is good, the food average, the company A-OK. Colonel...
Deleted by censors.
Is our CO. He is a cracking fellow. I see Thurs quite often, and although you told me to look after her... I think she can look after herself. She won the battalion ladies' boxing tournament. We move up to...
Deleted by censors.
Next week. I will write again when I have more news. Your son, Anton. Letter from Anton next, sent 2 weeks before he died. Apart from one other person, I had the breakfast room all to myself. As fate would have it... That one other person was Colonel Phelps.
"Good morning, Corporal,"
he said cheerfully, as he spotted me trying to hide behind a copy of The Owl. "Colonel!" He sat down opposite me without asking.
"Good response to my presence here so far, you know,"
he said genially, taking some toast and waving a spoon at the waiter.
"You there, sir, more coffee." We're having the talk next Sunday. You are still coming, I trust.
I just might be there, I responded, quite truthfully.
Splendid, he gushed. I must confess, I thought you'd stumbled off the path when we spoke on the gas bag.
Where is it being held?
A bit hush-hush, old girl. Walls have ears, careless talk, all that rot. I'll send a car for you. Seen this?
He showed me the front page of The Mole. It was, like all the papers, almost exclusively devoted to the upcoming offensive that everyone thought was so likely there didn't seem even the slightest hope that it wouldn't happen. The last major battle had been in 75, and the memories and lessons of that particular mistake didn't seem to have sunk in.
"More coffee, I said, sir!"
roared Phelps to the waiter, who had given him tea by mistake.
"This new plasma rifle is going to clinch it, you know. I've even thought of modifying my talk to include a request for anyone wanting a new life on the peninsula to start filing claims now. I understand from the Foreign Secretary's office that we will need settlers to move in as soon as the Russians are evicted for good."
"Don't you understand?" I asked in an exasperated tone. "There won't be an end. Not while we have troops on Russian soil."
"What's that?" murmured Phelps. "Huh? Hey?"
He fiddled with his hearing aid and cocked his head to one side like a parakeet. I made a non-committal noise and left as soon as I could. It was early. The sun had risen, but it was still cold. It had rained during the night, and the air was heavy with water. I put the roof of the car down in an attempt to blow away the memories of the night before. The anger that had erupted when I realized that I couldn't forgive Landon. It was the dismay that I would always feel the same, rather than the dismay over the unpleasant ending to the evening which upset me most. I was 36, and apart from 10 months with Filbert, I had been alone for the past decade, give or take a drunken tussle or two. Another 5 years of this, and I knew that I would be destined not to share my life with anyone. The wind tugged at my hair as I drove rapidly along the sweeping roads. There was no traffic to speak of, and the car was humming sweetly. Small pockets of fog had formed as the sun rose, and I drove through them as an airship flies through cloud. My foot rolled off the throttle as I entered the small parcels of gloom, then gently pressed down again as I burst free into the morning sun once more. The village of Wanborough was not more than 10 minutes' drive from the Finnis Hotel. I parked outside the GSD Temple, once a C of E church, and turned off the engine. The silence of the country a welcome break. In the distance, I could hear some farm machinery, but it was barely a rhythmical hum. I had never appreciated the peace of the country until I had moved to the city. I opened the gate and entered the well-kept graveyard. I paused for a moment, then ambled at a slow, respectful pace past the rows of well-tended graves. I hadn't visited Anton's memorial since the day I left for London, but I knew that he wouldn't have minded. Much that we had appreciated about one another had been left unsaid. In humour, in life, and in love, we had understood. When I arrived in Sebastopol to join the 3rd Wessex Tank Light Armoured Brigade, Landon and Anton were already good friends. Anton was attached to the brigade as signals captain. Landon was a lieutenant. Anton had introduced us. Against strict orders, we had fallen in love. I had felt like a schoolgirl, sneaking around the camp for forbidden trysts. In the beginning, the Crimea just seemed like a whole barrel of fun. None of the bodies came home. It was a policy decision, but many had private memorials. Anton's was near the end of the row, underneath the protective bough of an old yew, and sandwiched between two other Crimean memorials. It was well kept up, obviously weeded regularly, and fresh flowers had recently been placed there. I stood by the unsophisticated grey limestone tablet and read the inscription. Simple and neat. His name, rank, and the date of the charge. There was another stone not unlike this one, 1,600 miles away, marking his grave on the peninsula. Others hadn't fared so well. 14 of my colleagues on the charge that day were still unaccounted for. It was military jargon for not enough bits to identify. Quite suddenly, I felt someone slap me on the back of my head. It wasn't hard, but enough to make me jump. I turned to find the GSD priest looking at me with a silly grin on his face.
"Whatcha doofus?" he bellowed.
"Hello, Joffy," I replied, only slightly bemused. "Want me to break your nose again?"
"I'm cloth now, sis," he exclaimed. "You can't go around bashing the clergy."
I stared at him for a moment.
"Well, if I can't bash you," I told him, "what can I do?" "We at the GSD are very big on hugs, sis."
So he hugged, there in front of Anton's memorial, me and my loopy brother Joffy, whom I had never hugged in my life.
"Any news on Brembox and the fat arse?" he asked.
"If you mean Mycroft and Polly, no."
"Loosen up, sis. Mycroft is a brain box, and Polly, well, she does have a fat arse."
"The answer's still no. Mind you, she and Mum have put on a bit of weight, haven't they?"
"A bit, I should say. Tesco's should open a superstore just for the pair of them."
"Does the GSD encourage such blatant personal attacks?" I asked.
Joffy shrugged.
"Sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't," he answered. "That's the beauty of the global standard deity. It's whatever you want it to be. And besides, you're family, so it doesn't count."
I looked around at the well-kept building and graveyard. "How's it all going?"
"Pretty well, thanks. Good cross-section of religions and even a few Neanderthals, which is quite a coup. Mind you, attendances have almost tripled since I converted the vestry into a casino and introduced naked, greasy pole dancing on Tuesdays."
"You're joking."
"Yes, of course I am, doofus."
"You little shit," I laughed.
"I am going to break your nose again."
"Before you do, do you want a cup of tea?" I thanked him, and we walked toward the vicarage.
"How's your arm?" he asked.
"It's okay," I replied. Then, since I was eager to try to keep up with his irreverence, I added, "I played this joke on the doctor in London. I said to him when he rebuilt the muscles in my arm, 'Do you think I'll be able to play the violin?' And he said, 'Of course.' And then I said, 'That's good. I couldn't before.
Joffy stared at me blank-faced.
Spec-op's Christmas parties must be a riot, sis. You should get out more. That's probably the worst joke I've ever heard.
Joffy could be infuriating at times, but he probably had a point, although I wasn't going to let him know it. So I said instead,
Bollocks to you, then.
That did make him laugh.
You were always so serious, sis, ever since you were a little girl. I remember you sitting in the living room staring at the news at 10, soaking in every fact and asking Dad and the brain box a million questions.
Hello, Mrs. Higgins.
We had just met an old lady coming through the lich gate carrying a bunch of flowers.
Hello, Irreverend,
she replied jovially, then looked at me and said in a hoarse whisper,
Is this your girlfriend?
No, Gladys. This is my sister, Thursday. She's spec-ops and consequently doesn't have a sense of humour, a boyfriend or a life.
That's nice, dear,
said Mrs. Higgins, who was clearly quite deaf, despite her large ears.
Hello, Gladys,
I said, shaking her by the hand.
Joffy here used to bash the bishop so much when he was a boy, we all thought he would go blind. Good, good, she muttered.
Joffy, not to be outdone, added,
And little Thursday here made so much noise during sex that we had to put her in the garden shed whenever her boyfriend stayed the night.
I elbowed him in the ribs, but Mrs. Higgins didn't notice. She smiled benignly, wished us both a pleasant day, and teetered off into the churchyard. We watched her go.
104 next March, murmured Joffy.
Amazing, isn't she?
When she goes, I'm thinking of having her stuffed and placed in the porch as a hat stand.
Now I know you're joking, he smiled.
I don't have a serious bone in my body, sis. Come on, I'll make you that tea.
The vicarage was huge. Legend had it that the church's spire would have been 10 feet taller had the incumbent vicar not taken a liking to the stone and diverted it to his own residence. An unholy row broke out with the bishop, and the vicar was relieved of his duties. The larger-than-usual vicarage, however, remained.
Joffy poured some strong tea out of a Clarice Cliff teapot into a matching cup and saucer. He wasn't trying to impress. The GSD had almost no money, and he couldn't afford to use anything other than what came with the vicarage.
So, said Joffy, placing a teacup in front of me and sitting down on the sofa,
do you think Dad's boffing Emma Hamilton?
He never mentioned it. Mind you, if you were having an affair with someone who died over 100 years ago, would you tell your wife?
How about me?
How about you what?
Does he ever mention me?
I shook my head, and Joffy was silent in thought for a moment, which is unusual for him.
I think he wanted me to be in that charge in Aunt's place, sis. Aunt was always the favoured son.
That's stupid, Joffy. And even if it were true, which it isn't, there's nothing anyone can do about it. Aunt is gone, finished, dead. Even if you had stayed out there, let's face it, army chaplains don't exactly dictate military policy.
Then why doesn't Dad ever come and see me?
I shrugged. I don't know. Perhaps it's a Chronogard thing. He rarely visits me unless on business, and never for more than a couple of minutes.
Joffy nodded, then asked, Have you been attending church in London, sis?
I don't really have the time, Joff.
We make time, sis.
I sighed. He was right. After the charge, I kind of lost my faith. Spec-ops have chaplains of their own, but I just never felt the same about anything.
The Crimea took a lot away from all of us, said Joffy quietly. Perhaps that is why we have to work twice as hard to hang on to what we have left.
Even I was not immune to the passion of the battle. When I first went to the peninsula, I was excited by the war. I could feel the insidious hand of nationalism holding me upright and smothering my reason. When I was out there, I wanted us to win, to kill the foe. I revelled in the glory of battle and the camaraderie that only conflict can create. No bond is stronger than that welded in conflict. No greater friend is there than the one who stood next to you as you fought. Joffy suddenly seemed that much more human. I presumed this was the side of him his parishioners saw. It was only afterward that I realized the error of what we were doing. Pretty soon I could see no difference between Russian and English, French or Turk. I spoke out and was banned from the front line in case I sowed disharmony. My bishop told me that it was not my place to judge the errors of the conflict, but to look after the spiritual well-being of the men and women.
So that's why you returned to England?
That's why I returned to England.
You're wrong, you know,
I told him.
About what?
About not having a serious bone in your body.
Did you know Colonel Phelps was in town?
I did. What an arse. Someone should poison him.
I'm speaking opposite him as the voice of moderation. Will you join me at the podium?
I don't know, Joff. Really, I don't.
I stared at my tea and refused a chocolate biscuit that he offered me.
Mum keeps the memorial well, doesn't she?
I said, desperate to change the subject.
Oh, it's not her, doofus. She couldn't bear to even walk past the stone, even if she did slim down enough to get through the lich gate.
Who then?
Why, Landon, of course.
Did he not tell you?
I sat up.
No. No, he didn't.
He might write crap books and be a bit of a dork, but he was a good friend to Anton.
But his testimony damned him forever.
Joffy put his tea down and leaned forward, lowered his voice to a whisper, and placed his hand on mine.
Sister dearest, I know this is an old cliché, but it's true. The first casualty of war is always truth. Landon was trying to redress that. Don't think that he didn't agonize long and hard over it. It would have been easier to lie and clear Ant's name. But a small lie always breeds a bigger one. The military can ill afford more than it has already. Landon knew that, and so too, I think, did our Anton. I looked up at him thoughtfully. I wasn't sure what I was going to say to Landon, but I hoped I would think of something. He had asked me to marry him 10 years ago, just before his evidence at the tribunal. I had accused him of attempting to gain my hand by stealth, knowing what my reaction would be following the hearing. I had left for London within the week.
I think I'd better call him.
Joffy smiled.
Yes, perhaps you'd better. Doofus.